Okay. Evening, everybody. Plenty of questions here. Can get more. So, I'm sure we all live very busy lives, and certainly at this time of year, so many obligations. And so, shamefully, I find myself managing to myths I don't read, but I'm sure you'll have all heard about the tragedies of today, the shooting in Oregon and also in Israel. A couple were killed today, shot and in front of their children, and it's always obviously a tragedy, but one feels it even closer when one has something of a connection. I didn't know them at all personally, but they were Eitan and Na'ama Henkin, the son and daughter-in-law of two very significant and prominent figures, Rabbi and Rabbanit Henkin. Rabbi Henkin is without a doubt one of the most important living poskim and halachic minds for the religious Zionist and modern Orthodox community. Rabbanit Henkin is no less a person in her own right. She's been the driving force behind that, which I know a lot of you know. Very Karine studied there. I know Dorit studied there. Shira studied there. Marvelous place, and also she's the driving force behind the Yoetzet Halacha movement. Women becoming considered to be experts in laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, and it's one of the most important and significant developments of this last generation. And I'm sure Eitan and Na'ama were also in themselves absolutely amazing and significant people, but a huge loss for Am Yisrael and for the parallel of our community in Eretz Yisrael. And so this shiur, which completely unintentionally is not unconnected, should be in their memory and in their zchut, and that we shouldn't have to see tragedies like it again from now onwards. So, we're at the end of the Torah. Sorry?
You want the standard range?
Thank you. We're at the end of the Torah. Roshet Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim, many, many parashiyot. And the end of the reading of the Torah always coincides with this period of the year, with the Yom Noraim, and with Sukkot. And at the end of Sukkot, we have Simchat Torah. And Simchat Torah is the celebration of finishing the Torah. And along with Purim, there is nothing like it for celebrations, happiness, dancing, hakafot. You're all warmly encouraged to attend and bring friends to Simchat Torah here on Monday night. It's up there. And obviously, v'samachta b'chagecha, it fits in very well with Sukkot. Joyous, joyous festival. Mi shelo ra'a Simchat Beit HaShoeva. Somebody who didn't see the celebrations of the Simchat Beit HaShoeva in the Mikdash, the water drawing ceremony, never saw Simcha in his life, says the Mishnah. This is a happy time of year. But actually, if you read right at the end of the Torah, of Devarim, I don't think it's very difficult to make an argument that the Torah ends on a completely tragic note. My mother is without a doubt one of the most important influences in my life. She became religious later on in life. She is not the person who is the most knowledgeable. She's the person who is necessarily always thinking about spiritual matters by any means. I don't think she'd mind me saying that. But of the many lessons she's taught me, one of them, which I don't think I'll ever forget, is maybe it was a Shabbat, I don't know, I remember her reading V'zot HaBracha, the end of Devarim, just to herself, and I remember her being in tears. And I said to her, what's up? What's the matter, Mum? And she said, it's just so tragic. Right? The end of the Torah is the saddest thing that there is. Moshe, without a doubt, is the major character of Chumash. Right? Of five books of Chumash, he is the central character of four of them. He, born into slavery, raises in Paro's palace, leaves Egypt for many, many years after initially rebelling against the injustice, eventually returns, redeems his people, takes them through the sea, takes them to Har Sinai, leads them through the desert, all with a dream of entering Eretz Yisrael, and he dies at the threshold of the land. So, just you can turn to the psukim if you want to, but otherwise you can just listen. Parashat Bezot HaBracha, Devarim Perek Lamed Daled, chapter 34 of Devarim, page 1122. Pasuk Daled, verse 4. Vayomer Hashem Elav. And God said to him, Zot ha'aretz asher nishbati l'Avraham li'Yitzchak u'li'Yaakov le'mor. This is the land that I promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, Lezarecha etnena, to your children, I will give it. Heriticha be'einecha, look at it with your eyes, v'shama lo ta'avor. But you're not going to cross over. This isn't going to be for you. V'yamot sham Moshe, Eved Hashem be'eretz Moab al fi Hashem. And Moshe died, Moshe, the servant of God, died there, not in the land of Israel, in the land of Moab. V'yikbor oto bagay, he was buried in the valley, be'eretz Moab, mul beit pa'or, v'lo yada ish et gvurato ad hayom hazeh, and nobody knows the place of his burial until this day. V'moshe ben, mea ve'esrim shana b'moto, he was 120 years at his death, lo chahata eino v'lo nas lecho, his eye didn't dim, his face, his vigor didn't dim. V'yivku b'nei Yisrael et Moshe, v'alvot Moab, and Israel cried for him. For 30 days, Yahushua becomes the leader, and the whole Torah finishes Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud. V'lo kam navi od b'Yisrael k'moshe. No other prophet arose in Israel like Moshe. Asher yadu Hashem panim el panim, who knew God face to face. L'chol ha'otot v'hamoftim asher shalfu Hashem. All of the signs, the wonders, which God had sent him, la'asot be'eretz Mitzrayim, la'paro, l'chol avadav, l'chol ha'otso, l'chol ha'yad ha'chazakah, all the great outstretched arm, mighty actions and deeds, asher asa Moshe le'inei kol Yisrael. And this is how the Torah ends, right? The Torah would have ended, it would have given such a different impression if the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua was part of the Torah. Would that have been so difficult to include that in Sefer Devarim? And it finishes coming into Eretz Yisrael, and this whole story of Abraham and his family and his children and Eretz Yisrael and She'abud Mitzrayim, slavery in Egypt, finishes with a happy ending. Doesn't have the happy ending. Moshe dies there. And this is fascinating. Once upon a time, this was a major theme of Sukkot. And it makes complete sense that it would have been a major theme of Sukkot. That the death of Moshe was one of the ideas in the air. How do we know this? Well, Piyotim, which we mentioned a number of weeks ago, I think, when we were talking about Selichot, there are many Piyotim that are written that used to be said at this time of year about Moshe's death. It was in the air. Piyotim often follow the Parashiyot HaShavua, and that coloured the atmosphere of Sukkot. And if you take a moment more to think about it, you'll realise that actually, although we said V'samachta b'chagecha and Simchat Torah, and this festival is all about joy, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that. What's the Megillah that we read Shabbat Chol HaMoed? Kohelet. Couldn't it have been Shir HaShirim? Right? Is there... Okay, Eicher is historical, so it's linked to Tisha B'Av. But is there a more somber, depressing book of Tanakh than Kohelet? Doesn't it seem radically out of place on Sukkot, this festival which is just about joy? What on earth is it doing there? Chol HaMoed Sukkot, in the very heart of the festival, we read Havel, Havalim, Hakol Havel. Everything is vanity. Nothing is worthwhile. What? Chazal had difficulties as to why Kohelet was included in the Bible at all. But even accepting its inclusion in the Bible, why on earth is it read at Sukkot?
I think seasonally it makes sense.
Go on.
It's like the harvest season, so it's sort of the time where everything is going to be going into, like, collected and will be barren for some time, and like going into the darker winter and it's colder. And
well, you're Devara. That's beautiful. Absolutely. I think you're adding ideas to the theory. Sukkot, as you say, is on the threshold of winter. Hurricane joking.
Yeah, but
right?
I guess the weather like this isn't in Israel, so I don't know if that counts as
well. Yeah, it also is in Israel. You can get it around this time. And then Simchat Torah came along. Simchat Torah, which is a very, very late festival. It's the most modern festival. It's much, much more modern than Hanukkah, right? Simchat Torah does not exist, obviously, in Chumash, and completely eclipses and changes this idea, right? And so now Sukkot is associated with this huge amount of happiness, and so can't talk about, don't really think about Moshe's death, because it seems to go against the grain. So here we are. I'm trying to uncover it. And what I want to share with you tonight, some ideas, is not Moshe's death really in Chumash, but Moshe's death in Midrashei Chazal, in the Midrash. Midrash is an enormous literature, right? Far, far bigger than the Talmud, and in many ways much more difficult to navigate, to know what's where, to know how to read it. People often ask me, and it's something that I struggle with, how do you learn Midrash? Like, how do you actually get the knowledge of Midrash? As far as I know, the only answer is just to read it. Just read, and get a sense for it. I can recommend a few books, a few recommended pieces, but that's the central idea. There is no topic in all of Midrashic literature that is more developed than the death of Moshe. Okay, just take that for a moment, right? Think how many potential topics there are to speak about. There is no topic that is more developed than the death of Moshe. I've got two source sheets here, one which everyone will get, and then one at the end which you're welcome to look at if you want. The reason I haven't done it for everybody is it's longer, we haven't got time for it, and it's not all translated. But just to show you one, this is from Devarim Rabbah, source number 17 on this source sheet. It starts here, goes there, goes there, goes there, goes there, goes there, goes there. And that's a short version of it. This is just one continuous midrash about Moshe not wanting to die, about him turning everywhere, pleading not to die, turning to the mountains, turning to the sea, etc., etc. It's just one cut version sheet when I give the long version to sheep what it's like. There is no topic like it developed. Why is it so rich? Why is there so much about Moshe's death in Chazal? Well, I think two basic reasons. Firstly, and whilst I'm saying this, you can take and pass around. Firstly, because firstly, because major characters often don't die on Tanakh. You know what I mean? The death of the Avot, often they sort of like fade out. They have their life story and then they pass out and it's the next generation. Anybody who's anybody is born, right? There's a story about their birth, about their childhood, or their birth is announced. But biblical characters frequently don't die, right? They just sort of pass on. Moshe's death is essential. And connected to that, it's actually also, as I think we'll see, the opportunity for Chazal not really to speak about Moshe, but to use Moshe's death as a way of speaking about death and mortality and human life in general. So, if you turn, whatever, you don't even need to return to it, but you'll remember Bamidbar, Parshat Chukat, chapter 20, Perek Kaf. Why does Moshe die? What's the reason why Moshe can't enter into the land? Mei Meriva, exactly. Because he strikes the rock. We don't need to read the Pasuk now, but Poshut Pshat, Pshata Poshut, it is so clear that is why he dies. He strikes the rock. Therefore, Ya'an Asher Lohe Emantem Bi, since you didn't believe in me, Lahakti Sheni, okay, take over. You're learning it, right? Lahakti Sheni, since you didn't believe me to sanctify me, therefore you shall not go. Lo taviyat kahal hazer, you shall not bring this congregation into the land. Moshe sins. Moshe makes a mistake. Therefore, he dies. Okay. Look at Kafka. Kafka was not part of Chazal, in case anybody thought he was. Kafka, great 20th century writer. Jewish, very influenced actually by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Some very interesting things written about the connection between Rabbi Nachman's stories and Kafka's stories. Kafka died very young, was very ill for a long time. He was very, very interested in biblical stories. And at one point he writes in his diary as follows. Moshe does not enter the land of Canaan, not because his life was too short, but because his life was a human life. Think on that for a moment. There is something inevitable, essential about being human, which means we die with unfulfilled expectations, with unfulfilled ambitions, without being able to do everything that we want to do. Is that pshat in Chumash? Definitely not. You could probably give a very interesting talk about Kafka and Kohelet. Maybe next year. Moshe dies because of the sin. So Kafka seems to be mechudash. Kafka seems to be just taking an idea and attaching it to something in Chumash, even though it's not what the Torah says. Let's see what Chazal have to say. Here's the Sifri. Source number two. V'met b'har asher ata ole shama. You're going to die on the mountain which you go up to. Last week's parasha. And now the Midrash cuts in. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam. Moshe says, Master of the universe, lama ani met? Why am I dying? Lo tov shiyomru. Wouldn't it be better that people would say, Tov Moshe mimareh mishiyomru. Tov Moshe Mishmua. It's a very funny sort of argument. Let me stay alive in the land of Israel for educational purposes. The Shem Chinuch. That the next generation should see, this is Moshe. Moshe took us out of Egypt. That's why he's alive, right? And we keep it right here. Rather than just Moshe dissolving into memory. Mipi Hashmua. Lo tov, wouldn't it be better, Shiyomru, that they should say, Ze Moshe, Shotzianu mi Mitzrayim, Vekara lanu et hayam, Vehorid lanu et haman, Vasalu nisim vekvurot. This is Moshe, who performed all of these miracles, took us out of Egypt, split the sea, etc. Mishiyomru, then they should say, Kach vekach, haya Moshe, this is what Moshe was like, that I should become just part of the history books. Fascinating argument. God doesn't buy it. Amar lo, he says, Kalcha Moshe, enough, shtum. Gezeira hi milfanai. It's a decree before me. Very interesting language. It's not I have decreed, but it's a decree before me. Shehi shaveh b'chol adam, which is equal before all man, anybody who is human. Shene'emar, as is said, zot ha-torah adam. That's a typo. Zot torah ta-adam ki yamut ba'ohel. This is the Torah of man. This is the law of a person who dies in a tent. Where's that from, that pasuk? Tum and Tara, where? Yofi, what parasha is Bamidbar Yutet? Or what's the next chapter after Bamidbar Yutet? Bamidbar Kaf, what takes place in Bamidbar Kaf? Moshe strikes the rock. Right? Moshe strikes the rock. Moshe is barred from entry into the land. But although the reason there is because he struck the rock, in this midrash, what's the reason? Everybody has to die. That is the Perek, chapter 19, of the Para Aduma, of the Red Heifer, Tuma and Tahara, purity, impurity given by the dead.
Can you explain Moshe's argument? Because I don't understand how it's compelling.
Well, obviously it's not compelling.
No, I don't see anything.
It's taken from a much longer thing in which Moshe attempts many, many different arguments. And what we're going to see is that Chazal put in Moshe's mouth 101 different arguments as to why he should stay alive. The specific argument that he's using is, Hashem, you want Am Yisrael to remember their history and to remember coming out of Egypt and to all of its significance in Har Sinai. Don't you think they'll be more likely to remember it if I'm still alive, and they can still look at me as this is the person, this is the role model, right? I think you do understand the argument to an extent, that when a very great person dies, something has been lost from the world. Yeah, the person's got Talmidim, yeah, books will be written about them. But Lo Dome, you can't compare it to the, I mean, just, you know, our own and my own community. This year, Rav Lichtenstein died, and, you know, certainly everybody in the yeshiva, and I think far more broadly, felt that of the many, many great people that we have in younger generations, of his students and more beyond, no one's going to replace that. Like, something has been lost. So that seems to be Moshe's argument. But it's even more interesting what then happens in the continuation of the Midrash. Amru malachei hasharet, the angels, say, lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel olam, lama meit Adam harishon, why did the first man die? Amar lahem, shelo asa pikudai, he didn't fulfill my commandments, didn't do what I told of him, he ate from the tree. Amru lafanav, the angels say, v'harei Moshe asa pikudecha, Moshe did everything that he was supposed to do. He still dies. What's the simple response? No, he didn't. Right? Moshe struck the rock. He did do something wrong. That's why he died. Why did Adam die? Because he ate from the tree. Why did Moshe die? Because he struck the rock. That would be extremely simple. However, Hashem doesn't say that. Gezeira hi milfanai. It's a decree before me. Shaver b'chol Adam. Equal before all men, before all humans. Shene'emar zot Torah ta'adam ki yamut ba'ohel. This is the Torah of man who dies in a tent. Everybody has to die. Moshe, by nature of being human, has to die. And it's not just, I think, the obvious thing. Everybody has to die. But has to die with unfulfilled ambitions, without achieving everything. Open to the floor. What do we think of this? What's your response? Either how you think about it or what Chazal are trying to say through it.
Does this apply to everyone after Moshe or ever? Any man ever?
I think it's pointed to every man, just the nature of the world such.
I would think. And this is sort of like pushing it a bit further. Not just lo alecha ham lecha ligmor. Yeah, lo yachol. You won't be able to. Right. This doesn't make it into Pirkei Avot. Right. Any other thoughts? So something that's very interesting, whenever it comes to the study of Midrash, shouldn't be overdone because it can be reductive, but is to say, what is this Midrash trying to say about its period in time? Right? One theory as to where Midrash develops from is that Midrash were originally drashot that were given. They were sermons that were given in shuls in the first few centuries after the destruction of the temple of the common era. So these are what was being said, the way in which a good contemporary sermon in a synagogue relates to current events, so too the Midrashim were. Anyone want to try and think how this might have been a contemporary Midrash? Sifri, it's old, likely talking about, I should go back and check it, but I don't think it's after the year 600. Very simple. Sorry. Yeah, sure.
The deaths of like the greater generations of 1080.
Sorry?
The deaths of the greater generations of the 1080.
Don't be upset that Rabbi Akiva died, even Moshe died. Interesting. Sharon, is that? Sorry, everyone speak up with this.
Israel was, like, his biggest dream was, like,
interesting.
Israel.
Interesting. We're going to come to that theme very, very clearly, but not at this stage. Very simply, so simply it's staring us in the face. There is a group of people who are becoming more and more significant and more influential at this period in history, imposing a very great and significant challenge to the Jewish people, who actually believe that their greatest religious figure, who did everything that could be expected of the most significant person for a religion, doesn't actually die. And in fact, he comes back to life, right? And in fact, carries on living, right? This significant belief at the heart of Christianity, what Chazal seem to be doing in this Midrash is saying, even our greatest ever prophet, who did absolutely everything, who later on the Rambam will codify as having had a greater level of Nevuah than any other prophet, at the end of the day, even he is still human. And even he died. And this, you could read this Midrash as saying, this is one dividing line between Christianity, what starts off as a part of Judaism, right? Very important to remember that. No, Christianity is not the same as Hinduism or as Buddhism. It starts as part of Judaism. And this is a Chazal saying, this is not what we are about, right? In our religion, even the greatest prophet is nevertheless human. Zot Torat Adam Ki Yamut Be'ohel. Do people find this a depressing piece? You want to unpack that a bit?
It's not a reason. It's just, there is no reason.
Are you commenting on the fact, on the idea you've done that?
No.
I think what Shira means is just the, we like to have reasons. Since it's the idea that Moshe died for striking the rock. This is just across the board. Pinchas?
The phrase, Zerah Hibonai, reminds me of the Asar HaRugin Achos, when the Malachim come and complain to Hashem.
Very, very similar. Right, similar idea.
Adam got an answer, but Moshe didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are, like, answers exist, but Moshe didn't get it.
Well, but also
answers exist, but maybe not always.
Awesome.
Devorah.
Because of Adam, and because Adam didn't fulfill the instructions, that was the reason why all men have to die. And so, for Adam.
No, Adam dies because he didn't do what Hashem told him to do.
Right, but because he didn't, it happened with Eitz HaDaat, there was a decree that death, it was that's where it came into
interesting.
Existence.
That idea definitely exists. I'm not sure it's the idea here. I think that seems to imply Adam died because he didn't do my commandments. If somebody did do my commandments, then in theory they should live. Why does Moshe die? Because actually, sort of like you said, everybody has to die. Max?
Well, talking about the idea of unfulfillment, I see a bit of a disconnect between Adam and Moshe. Like, Adam wasn't, at least according to my knowledge of the story, Adam wasn't really going anywhere. He just was there. Like, not that I'm sure he was experiencing Gan Eden or whatever, but like Moshe has been looking forward to this for a little while now. Like, so I would imagine that the disappointment that Moshe felt just because he was looking forward to it for so long.
Right.
It was probably, it just seems different, like a different kind of experience
right.
than what Adam must have experienced.
Mm-hmm. So I actually want to try and put a much more positive spin on this Midrash. Okay? If that's allowed. In fact, now let's go back to Bamidbar. Bamidbar, where it originally happens, the striking of the rock and the decree.
Page 844.
Thank you. Page 844, Parshat Chukat. Here we've got the lines from Pasuk Yudbet from verse 12 onwards. Before we come to them, I want to think as follows. What should happen at this stage? What should happen once Moshe is told, you slipped up? Made one mistake, it's all over.
Moshe.
Your life's dream, not going to happen.
Teshuva?
Huh? Teshuva, okay. Or what would you expect from Moshe?
Moshe would be like, alright.
Really? You expect? Exactly. Ve'tchanan. Right? He breaks down. Right? He can't believe it. What, that's it? Right? It should be over. This is tragic. This is the worst thing ever to happen. What would be much more understandable would be for Moshe to say, well, okay, if you actually mean that, then I'm retiring right now. We've got a question to ask, which is, why does Moshe continue after Bamidbar Perek Kaf? Why on earth would he carry on after it's over? After he knows that he's not going to be able to achieve what he wants to achieve. And look at the next, this is the critical point, look at the next psukim. Pasuk Yud Dalet, beginning of Reviv, verse 14. Vishlach Moshe Malachim Mikadesh El Melech Edom. Moshe sends messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom, saying, Ko Amar Hicha Yisrael, that's as your brother Israel say, Atayadata, you know what's happened to us, etc., etc. Our whole story, let us pass through the land. He gets on straight away with the job. And I never paid any attention to these psukim. Never ever. I never noticed a question on them until I went to Poland, before I went to Poland for the first time, and I was part of a preparatory course. And we had an amazing woman come and speak to us, the Shoah survivor, who grew up in Germany, who described her upbringing. Her father owned a business, and the whole family was offered safe passage to France in 1936, and her father said, I just can't leave the business, right? In the end, she was the sole survivor. Everybody else perished. And just that, it struck me like all of her family could have survived, right? If only her father had said, I'll leave the business and we'll start again somewhere else. Now, surely she should be broken by that. Surely she should spend her whole life saying, if only, if only, if only, if only. She didn't blink. She didn't say that at all. She just carried straight on. A little while later, I read Night by Elie Wiesel. Some people read it. If you haven't, the first book you should read on the Shoah. He describes in it how he wouldn't have survived the camps were it not for the fact he was with his father. Right, this is known that people who had somebody else to, not just to look after them, but for them to look after, were much more likely to survive the camps. Right at the end of the war, his father is very, very ill. He's in the camp infirmary. The Soviets are approaching, the Nazis are abandoning the camps, and what are called the death marches are beginning. They march with all the inmates of the camp. And Elie Wiesel's left with a dilemma. Should he leave his father there in the infirmary, but he doesn't know if the Nazis are going to blow up the camp, or should he take his very, very ill father with him on what's going to turn into the death march? He decides for the latter, and within a day and a half, his father can't carry on, and he's dead, he dies, and he leaves him there in the snow. And he writes, almost as a side thought, I found out afterwards that 3 days after we left the camp, the Soviets arrived, and everybody who was in the infirmary survived. And it's the most tragic, heartbreaking thing. And the next line should be, and I couldn't ever get over this for years and years, and I thought, why was I so stupid, and if only I'd made this decision. But again, like this woman, he doesn't mention it. And so I think, my thought is, that if you absorb this idea, that Shira says correctly is a depressing idea at first glance, but that Gezeira hi milfanai sheshaveh b'chol adam, it's something that's equal in front of God, that applies to all men, that no matter who they are, they will die, which doesn't just mean they will die, but it means they will die with unfulfilled expectations. You will never get 10 out of 10. The maximum you can ever get is 9 out of 10, even Moshe. What that means is that actually once you've absorbed and you've internalized that message, now it frees me up. Now it liberates me. I know I'm not going to be able to achieve everything, so I make sure I do everything that I can. Moshe knows he's not going to be able to do everything, but he gets straight on with it, Vishlach Malachim. I haven't put this midrash on your source sheet, it's on the longer one, you can look at it afterwards, but Baruch Shekivanti, I found this afterwards in a different midrash, Midrash Tanchuma. Vishlach Moshe Malachim, Mikadesh El Melech Edom. Moshe sends messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom, our Pasuk, etc., etc., he gets on with it. But Noheg Sheba Olam, what normally happens in the world, Adam osebet ragmatika im chavero v'hifsid. A man enters into business or a deal with his friend and he loses. Piresh mimen. He abandons him. Ve'eno rotze liroto. He doesn't want to see him. He's lost. He feels overcome. V'moshe. Af al pi she'ne'enash al yidei Yisrael. Even though he is punished. Lo parak misho'an me'alav. He doesn't leave this yoke. He doesn't leave what his goal is. Ela v'yishlach Moshe malachim. He sends messengers, he gets straight on with it. That is our first midrash. Now I've spent a while on it. I just think it's so rich. I think it's so important. If you have to leave, don't worry. No offense taken. If you want to stay, share a few more. They'll be quicker than that one. So we've seen something interesting, which is that there is this idea, not just in Kafka, but also in Chazal, that even though in Bamidbar it's very, very clear why Moshe dies, why does Moshe die? Because he strikes the rock. In the Midrash, Moshe just dies for no sin at all, just for being human. What other Midrashim do is actually to say, no, Moshe does die for a sin, but not the one that the Torah tells you about. In fact, it's something else altogether. It's something that occurs elsewhere in his life, possibly much, much earlier. When you read Shemot, the beginning of Shemot, you're first introduced to Moshe. It sort of seems to go extremely slowly, the whole story at the snare, at the burning bush, right? Hashem says, I want you to go back to Mitzrayim, I want you to redeem my people. And Moshe should be like, okay, great, let's do this, right? He was very into justice beforehand. But he resists and he resists and he resists. Lo ish dvarim anochi, I'm not a man of words, and who shall I say has sent me, and they won't listen to me, etc., etc. Right? And just carries on for a long time, and you sometimes get a sense that actually Hashem's getting angry about this and annoyed about this. Page 344, the very last verses of Parashat Shemot. They end as follows. Sorry, that was the wrong page. My bookmark was in the wrong place. Still, the very last verses of Shemot, that's correct. Of Parashat Shemot. Sorry? 316, perfect. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, ata tireh asher easeh lefaro. Hashem says to Moshe, now you'll see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh, ki b'yad chazaka yishlachem, because I'm going to send them with an outstretched arm, b'yad chazaka yikashem, with a strong arm, they'll be forced out of his land. Seems like a nice verse. Okay? Zog Rashi, look at Rashi. Towards the final comments of Parashat Shemot. Ata tireh, now you will see. Hirhavta al midotai, you doubted me. You doubted my attributes, you doubted my ability. Loka Avraham, not like Avraham, Sha'amalti lo, I said to him, Ki bi Yitzchak yikare lechazera. Yitzchak will be the father of all your children. V'achar kach, and afterwards, Amalti lo, I said to him, He'elehu lehola, offer him up as a sacrifice, obviously, therefore preventing him from being the father of your children. V'lohi harachal medotai, he didn't question me for a moment, but you did. You spent ages arguing with me. Lefikach, therefore, ata, now you will see what I'm going to do. Ha'asui leparo, what I'm going to do to Pharaoh, tire. However, lo ha'asui lemalchei shiva umot k'shavihem le'eretz Yisrael. You're not going to see what I'm going to do to the kings of the land of Canaan when you lead the people into the land. You're no longer going to be there then. In other words, had you not argued with me, had you not said, really, are we going to be able to do this? Who shall I tell them is coming? They're not going to believe in me, etc. Had you had pure and perfect faith like Abraham did, you'd have gone into the land. But you doubted me, so you're not going to. Source number 3, the Mechilta, gives a very long version of this. It gives a long mashal about a king who wants to give a great job to a servant of his. He takes him through his orchards to convince him, and he takes him to his storehouses and his treasure houses to convince him. Gives him a whole, week of let's show it to him. And then at the end, the servant says, rather not, right? To which the king says, couldn't you have said, I'd rather not right at the beginning? Right? Couldn't you have saved me this week's worth of having to convince you? Wouldn't that have been the better thing to do? Just, we'll skip the bulk of it, just the very end of the Hebrew, or you can follow in English on the next page. Towards the end, halfway through the last full line, Kach kavash HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Shisha Yamin, for 6 days at the burning bush, did Hashem try to convince Moshe to take the people out of Egypt. U'bashvi'i, and on the seventh day, Amar lo, he said to him, Moshe said to God, Shalech na biyad tishalach. Please just send them through someone else. Nishbalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Yikanes Le'eretz Yisrael. At that moment, Hashem said, you will not enter into the land. Shene'emar, as it said, Lo Taviu Et HaKahal Hazeh. Where's that passage come from? Bamidbar chapter 20, right? Jump forward 2.5 books, take a passage from there, and bring it back. See how wonderful Midrash is, how creative it is in its ability to do that? Moshe's slowness, his lack of faith, seemingly, to accept the task that he's given to him, from the very start, built in from the beginning of his career, is that he's going to fail. Now, mentioned before, we spoke about Christianity. It's very interesting to think, is there a historical context to this? Where's this from, this Midrash? Somebody see a name on it? It's part of the Mechilta, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And who's the person that says this Midrash? Rabbi Tarfon. So when are we talking about? Sorry?
The generation after Rabbi Akiva, or not before Rabbi Akiva.
Contemporary of Rabbi Akiva.
With Rabbi
Akiva. Yeah, right. Everyone knows their Haggadah, right? They're sitting in B'nai Brak. Tanayim, like you all said, right? It's from the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He's a student of Rabbi Akiva. When are the Tanayim? And when are these Tanayim?
Second generation.
But what's happening? After the destruction of the temple, is it easy to be a Jew? Absolutely not. Right? If anything, the, what are they called? Who's the emperor in like 110s, 120s? Hadrian, yeah. If anything, the Hadrianic persecutions, which Pinchas mentioned, the Asara Hagui Malchot, the 10 martyrs are from that period, or if anything, much worse than the period of Korban Habayit. This Midrash comes from them, right? And we know, this is not my idea, this is the idea of Professor Gerald Blidstein, student of Rav Soloveitchik, professor of Jewish thought, Machshav Yisrael, at Ben Gurion. He's written a whole book on this topic, which is a fantastic book, and which informed my shiur immensely. He suggests as follows. Yadua, we know that there were many amongst Chazal, including Rabbi Akiva, who thought that we have to fight Rome, right? Who encouraged their students, who encouraged their communities, join Bar Kokhba, join the rebellion against Rome, make things count, we will win the land of Israel back to us. And so they take Moshe, and they take the example of Moshe, and what do they say? They say, are you going to be a man or are you going to be a mouse? When the moment comes and you are given the opportunity to do something historical, are you going to are you going to say maybe, maybe not? Or are you going to jump at the chance of it? Are you going to be able to do it? Because what happens if you don't? What happens if you're not sure? If you're not sure whether or not to make the jump? You don't enter into the land of Israel. Or if you're already in the land of Israel, you lose the land of Israel. If you are a Rav, if you're one of Chazal, and you're in some point after the year 70, especially between the year 100 and the year 130, this is the way in which you, or at least many of you, read the story of Moshe. It's not so much about striking the rock, it's about when the moment comes, are you going to fight for your people? Do you hesitate, or do you go for it? So, that's the Tanayim. Yeah, Max.
I guess different rates over different times, but so like any kind of like historical history, the matching explanation of other understandings of like why Moshe the Rock.
I don't understand the question.
Maybe I missed the point, but like we're positing that because it was the rebellion during a troubling time, like King Herod's rule, that they a lot of times would interpret, especially this Midrash, that the whole reason Moshe didn't go into the land of Israel was because he didn't make it or break it for the people,
yeah.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the idea that Moshe did not come around yet, maybe? The idea that Moshe Rabbeinu is not allowed into the land of Israel to take the rock.
So they feel that what characterizes the Midrash is they've got the license, they've got the ability to ignore that. Right, they will focus on something else. That's what's so amazing about Midrash, is this flexibility, there's this fluidity in the way in which, say, Parshanim, for the most part, more classical commentators won't be able to. Midrash is amazing. You should all learn Midrash, right? One of the lines that pains me more than any other line, I hope you never hear it, but I've heard it a number of times, is when people say, oh, it's just a Midrash. Don't pay too much attention to that. What a foolish, stupid line, that is to say. Midrash is the greatest, richest resource we have for deep and penetrating readings of Tanakh and deep and penetrating readings of what it means to be Jewish, what it means to be human. That's the Tanaim. I want to show you a different Midrash. This Midrash puts the focus on Moshe's relationship to Dor Yitziat Mitzrayim, the generation that left Egypt. And you'll remember that story of Chumash, certainly the story of Bamidbar, is of two generations, the generation that left Egypt and the generation that went into the land. The Netziv, at the beginning of his commentary to Bamidbar, quotes a beautiful midrash. Vayavdel Elohim ben ha'or ben ha'choshech. And God distinguished between the light and the darkness. Zeh sefer Bamidbar, asher hivdil ha'kadosh baruch hu ben yotzei Mitzrayim lenichnasei le'eretz Yisrael. God distinguished between the light and the dark is the book of Bamidbar, where God separated between two generations, those that left Egypt and those that came into the land. And which generation is Moshe? Moshe is the generation that left Egypt. And there's an amazing idea, amazing discussion in Chazal, as to whether or not those that died in the desert, when it comes to Techiyat HaMetim, the living of the dead again, will they come back to life? Or is it only those who are buried in Eretz Yisrael? It's a tremendous chut about being buried in Eretz Yisrael. Will those who are buried outside of Israel, those who died in the desert, will Techiyat HaMetim apply to them? And what's the clinching argument of the side that says Techiyat HaMetim applies to everybody, even those who are buried outside of the land of Israel? Where's Moshe buried? You really going to say that Moshe is not going to be part of Techiyat HaMetim? Devarim Rabbah, source number 4. Ki lo tavor et ha-yarden hazeh. You're not going to cross the Jordan. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu le-Moshe. Im ata nikbar kan. If you're buried here, almost like if you agree to be buried here. Bizchutcha hen ba'inimcha. Through your merit, will all of those who've died in the desert, will they come into the land? Connecting exactly to what Sharon was saying. Amar Rabbi Levi, said Rabbi Levi, look at this beautiful image. Lama hadavar domet, to what can the matter be compared? Le'echad shenit pazru ma'otav, to one who scattered his money somewhere, b'makom afela, in a dark place. Ma'asa, what did he do? What was the trick that he did in order to get to be able to find his money when he wants to come back to it? Natal zahov echad, he took a gold piece that shines, that glows, and he threw it amongst them. A most beautiful piece that will cast light in a dark place to be able to show him where all of his other beloved belongings are. Kach amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu le-Moshe. Thus did Hashem say to Moshe, Im nikbar ata etzlam, if you're buried amongst them, Bamidbar, in the desert, hen ba'im b'zchutcha va'at ba b'roshan. They will come through your merit and you will come at their head. Beautiful idea. Powerful idea, which now reverses almost everything that we've said. Moshe's not dying outside of the land of Israel because he just is a human. Moshe's not dying outside of the land of Israel because he hit the rock. Moshe's not dying outside of the land of Israel because he doubted Hashem's ability to take Am Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Moshe is dying outside of the land of Israel almost as a favor, b'zchut, to all those others. And to come back to the history, when did the Amoraim live?
200.
Some point after the mid-third century and onwards for several hundred years, and much more critically, where, for the most part, do they live? Bavel, Iraq, Mesopotamia, Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. The idea of Jewish sovereignty, or just Jewish life in the land of Israel, it's a distant memory. Nobody actually thinks, or maybe they do, but that they're going to be be dying in the land of Israel. What sort of message do you then give to your communities, to your constituents, to say to them, it's all right, we're still part of Jewish history. To say, we are still part of this larger plan, this larger spread of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's idea. And so Moshe comes to represent all of those. Us, our children, who are going to die in Chutz La'aretz. And so look how this idea gets extended, not just to being about those who die in the desert, that generation who left Egypt, but actually about every single Jew ever who dies in the diaspora. Source number 5, Midrash Tanchuma. Mipnei ma nikbal b'chutz la'aretz. Why was Moshe buried outside of the land? Kadei shiyichyu meitim shebuchutz la'aretz bezchutan. In order that all of those who've died out of the land will one day come back to the life and come into the land. The history is just so beautiful there. If you're one of the Tanaim in the 2nd century, you look at Moshe's death in light of your events, Rome, Bar Kokhba. But if you're one of the Amoraim, hundreds of years later, Moshe moves from being somebody who should have made a decision to fight for Israel when he didn't, to actually being a hero, a symbol of somebody who died outside of the land of Israel, our greatest prophet ever. Don't feel bad. Don't feel downcast. Don't feel depressed. We've got Moshe on our side. Moshe also didn't make it into the land. It's going to be okay. We're with him. Just before St. Pinchas' question, does anybody have a laptop with internet connectivity?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, Pinchas.
So why did Moshe complain so much?
In the Midrash or in
general, I guess, is that just like the lens focusing on...
Yeah. Something that takes a while to get used to when you learn Midrash and learn Midrash seriously is just the proliferation of different potential readings. So one of the best lines, it's a bit of a joke line, but one of the best lines is you can't ask a question against Midrash. Right? The Midrash creates its own mitzvah, it creates its own reality and its own reading. Okay? Any more questions, thoughts? One quick midrash, and we'll finish up. I'm going to give a parasha series, please God, starting from Bereshit on Tuesdays. Would love for all of you to come. And when we get to the end of Bereshit, and Yosef becomes the central character, you're going to hear this midrash. This midrash is going to come again. I'm not sure if this midrash is actually about Yosef or if it's about Moshe. Whatever it is, it's a very, very powerful midrash. We often don't miss the bridge, miss the connection between Moshe and Yosef. But because one's in Bereshit, one's in... But they're back-to-back characters, right? Yosef dies, chapter break, Moshe's born. In one version, we discussed a number of the arguments that Moshe makes to why he can't go into the land. In one version, Moshe says, what's the difference between me and Yosef? Right? Okay, Necha. I'll accept it. I'm going to die outside of Eretz Yisrael. Can't I at least be brought into the land? Yosef, who spent so much of his life outside the land of Israel and died outside of the land of Israel, his bones are taken into the land of Israel. That's what Moshe is doing on the last day of the Jews' life in Egypt. Right, when everything else is going on, he takes Moshe's bones. Can't that at least happen to me? And look at this response. This is like the most painful thing. Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam. Said Moshe to Hashem, Atzmotav Shel Yosef Nichnasu La'aretz, V'ani Eini Nichnas La'aretz. Yosef's bones go in and I don't go in? Amar Lach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Hashem, Mi Shehodeh Ba'artzo, he who admits that this is his land, he'll be buried in the land. But he who denied that this was his land, won't be buried in this land. What are we talking about? Huh?
The well stories.
The well stories?
Right, isn't it where Yosef is called in like the ancient Israelian, Moshe is called in the ancient
Israelian? Yosef or Debaltso Minayin. Where did Yosef admit this is his land? Gvirato, his mistress, Potiphar's wife, Omeret. Ra'o hivilanu ish ivri. You've brought this Hebrew man to sport with me. V'lo kafar. He didn't deny his identity. Ella, he tells the butler and the baker, Ganov gunavti me'eretz ha'ivrim. I've been stolen from the land of the Hebrews. In an Egyptian prison. If I was in an Egyptian prison today, I wouldn't admit that I'm Israeli. In an Egyptian prison, Moshe Yosef says who he is, proudly. At you, Shelocha Dita Bartzacha, who didn't admit it was your land, Ein Nikbal Bartzacha. Ketzad, when was this? Banot Yitro, the daughters of Yitro, run home to their father about the man who saved them from the shepherds. Omrot, they say, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haro'im. An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. V'hu Shomea, and Moshe hears, V'shotek, and is silent. Lefikach lo nikbar ba'otzo, therefore he is not buried in his land. What a painful midrash. You can almost think of Yosef and Moshe as opposites. Yosef, who spends his whole life away from his brothers and his family and the Jewish people, is the lonely man of faith. He's the Jew in exile who nevertheless, under so many difficulties, keeps his identity. He's buried in the land. What's so interesting about Moshe, and if we carry on with Shirim and Tashemot, this is going to be a very major theme. He is the leader. He is the manhi. He takes them out of Mitzrayim. He takes them to Har Sinai. He is there, but he's always different. He's always a little bit outside. Ben Harishon Kara Gershom. He called his first son Gershom because Ger Haiti Be'eretz Nochriya, because I was a stranger in a foreign land, on which one of the Mefarshim says, that's the pasuk of Moshe's life. Wherever Moshe is, he's the stranger. In Paro's palace, he's the Jew. On the Egyptian street, he's the Egyptian aristocrat. In Midian, he's the Ish Mitzri. When he comes back to Am Yisrael, there's also something. He does not admit it's his land. He's always got this question about his identity. Therefore, he's not buried in the land. Finally, Achron, Achron, Chaviv. You'll all know the famous question about who wrote the last 8 psukim of the Torah. I'm sure Justin can give us 101 answers. If Moshe is the author of the Torah, as obviously we believe, and according to the Rambam, wrote absolutely every single word, but Moshe dies and is buried 8 psukim before the end of the Torah. So, did he have Ruach HaKodesh? Were they written by Yehoshua? Lots of different answers, right? Fascinating, touches on theology. I just want to share one answer. What's the answer? Well, according to one midrash, actually everything we've been saying until now is wrong. Moshe doesn't die. Moshe survives. The Eish Omrim, source number 8. Lo meit Moshe. Moshe doesn't die. Ela omed u'mesharet lamala. He stays, he's alive. He serves on high. So he could carry on writing the psukim after he died, right? After he'd been buried, because he's actually still there. Now that answers the textual difficulty about who writes the last 8 psukim. Obviously it gets into major difficulties about, it says pretty clearly, Vayamat Moshe, Moshe died. And, so it creates a different difficulty. I just want to use that as the frame for the following idea. Here is Echad Ha'am. Echad Ha'am, great early Zionist thinker, not an Orthodox thinker, who's not going to say something that we'll necessarily be comfortable with from a classical Emunot V'Deot perspective, but it's a beautiful piece nonetheless. Can I have your laptop, Shira? This Moshe, the man of ancient times, who you wish to probe his existence and his essence. Right, he's talking about early biblical scholarship, biblical criticism, which wants to claim that actually Moshe never existed, he's just a fiction, etc., made up 1,000 years later. This is only a topic for you learned ones, such as yourselves. But we have a different Moshe. Our Moshe, whose image is carved into our hearts from generation to generation, and whose influence on our national life has not ceased from ancient days until now. The historical actuality of this Moshe is not dependent at all on your studies. For even if you were to succeed in proving definitively that Moshe never existed, or that it had occurred differently, this would not diminish one iota from the historical reality of our ideal Moshe, who has led us not only for 40 years in the desert of Sinai, but for thousands of years in all the deserts that we have passed through from Mitzrayim until now. V'yesh omrim, and those who say, Lo meit Moshe, Moshe did not die, Ella omed umasharet lamala. Chag Sameach, everybody.
Chag Sameach.
So, it's all the